From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Today, we require 93% of our employees to pay at least a portion of their salaries to fund government unions. This morning, I signed an executive order that ends unfair share fees. For those employees who wish not to fund government unions with which they may disagree.
This is the great myth. No one has to join the union. In fact, it's your right in this country to not join the union. That's absolutely certain. Unions have the right to bill for people for the services we render. As a union leader, I'm by law required to represent someone, even if they're not in the union.
And comments there. First, Governor Bruce Rauner this week. He had signed an executive order eliminating so-called fair share fees for state workers. Unions collect them from workers who don't want to be in a union but are still covered by a union-negotiated contract. We also heard from Dan Montgomery there, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. And we'll be talking about that executive order and other issues as we head into the budget address week at the Illinois State Capitol. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey, reporter for WUIS and Illinois Issues. And Doug Finke with Gatehouse News joins us from the State Capitol. Gatehouse includes the Springfield State Journal Register, the Peoria Journal Star, and papers in Lincoln, Macomb, and Galesburg, among others. Doug, welcome to the show today.
Glad to be here.
I did see some people that have a flair for the dramatic when this came out, said Rauner declared war on the unions. Is that what happened here?
Well, it was certainly a shot across the bow, I think, especially since he issued the executive order on the same day that the state entered into contract negotiations with the unions for a new contract that will take effect beginning July 1st. So, I'd say it was certainly a reminder that I'm the governor, here I am, and take a look at this.
Tell us a little bit about this, Amanda. What is this asking? What is this telling people?
Well, so fair share, and Rauner says that that's an inappropriate term for using it all, but basically what it means is that if you don't want to be a member of the union, but yet unions by law do have to, in a sense, represent any employee, whether they're members or not, if there is any sort of dispute that they need to go forward with or for raises and other protections that are given to workers. And so this is basically saying that you're going to pay your fair share. You're going to give the union a fee for the work that it's doing on your behalf. And yet there are some employees that say, no, we don't want that. Rauner himself says that that is a breach of the First Amendment. It is forcing people to have government do something that they don't want their government to be doing in terms of maybe paying these raises or covering these health care or standing up for a worker in a dispute. That's what this is over. He has directed the central management services and all their state agencies to put instead the fair share fees in an escrow account for any of these employees that don't want to pay them.
Although there are some reports that that may not be enforceable, Brian Mackey?
Yeah, Rich Miller in his Capital Facts newsletter on Friday morning reported that the Comptroller of Illinois will not be following the executive order. She had sought an attorney general opinion, according to this report. And, apparently executive orders don't apply to other constitutional officers. And the law says that the unions get these fair share fees and that, you know, the Comptroller has to deduct X amount from employees' paychecks. And so she says she's going to follow the law.
Well, as a matter of fact, the Illinois Labor Relations Act has a specific section that says the provisions of this act trump executive orders. So, you know, Bruce Rauner may be the governor, but nonetheless, he still has to follow the law. And it occurred to me that the last governor who had such apparent disdain for following the law wound up in a bad place.
Yeah, let me add, though, that the governor, it's not just an executive order. His executive order was coupled with what is termed a declaratory judgment. Basically, he's taking this to court. So this is, I think, not all said and done. It may be temporarily because of the comptroller's decision, and yet Rauner wants to make this a bigger, broader issue, and one that, you know, all, depending, he says he wants to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court, could have nationwide implications.
Well, that all is true, but the fact that I'm taking something to court to challenge it doesn't mean that I no longer have to follow the law.
No, and I do think it's interesting, though, that Rauner, like we've seen with the president doing recently, is doing a lot of these executive orders for things mm-hmm. that, you know, are, as we're seeing today, may not be legal in some cases or may just be unnecessary in other cases. Like, he signed an executive order, I think we'll talk about later, you know, creating a task force to look at criminal justice. I mean, you know, I think that there is a perceived advantage in making it look like he's doing something. Look at this guy. He's getting in there. He's signing executive orders. He's taking action. And the Illinois Constitution has pretty narrow parameters for what executive orders can do. But, you know, that nuance is often lost in the press coverage. And there's the governor, man of action, doing things, breaking eggs, shaking up Springfield, as he would like to say.
I think it also plays into some of his critics' hands as well, in terms of the thought was that this is a CEO who hadn't been used to having to work with individuals. He was the boss and could tell people what to do. And this is obviously, you know, divided government with its separate branches and all of this executive order action. Critics are saying, hey, look, this is proof. This is what we thought he was going to do, and here it is. One could say, either as part of this man of action, that also the General Assembly has not been particularly active. While they were sworn in January, there have been really like two or three session days. It's not as if he has a bunch of bills to be signing, and we're all waiting for his budget address, which is to come on Wednesday. And until then, there's almost been a pause in legislative action.
Now, well, I think that's important to remember about his background, too. He's an individual who comes from a background where unions are an impediment. They get in the way of the equity investor coming in and reforming the company and getting rid of workers and outsourcing jobs. So you have those pesky contracts that provide rights to the workers. What kind of nonsense is this? And so, you know, his mindset is that these are obstacles to the efficient management of a business or of government, and he's trying to get rid of them.
Now, the legislature can take action to put a halt to an executive order, can they not? Can it not?
Yes, the General Assembly has 60 days, right, Doug?
Yeah, but I've gotten mixed reactions to this because there are people who believe that the legislature can only block an executive order dealing with reorganization of the government. And I don't know if that's a correct interpretation or not, but there are certainly people who think that maybe what he's doing with these other executive orders are beyond the power of the General Assembly to stop them. At the same time, immediately after he issued this executive order on fair share dues, it was remarkable the low-key response from both Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton. Cullerton's office issued a statement saying that it's under legal review, but really the governor ought to be focusing on the budget. And the same type of thing came from Madigan. He didn't even say it was under legal review. He just said that really what the governor ought to be doing right now is focusing on the budget. And so they did not set up any kind of confrontation with Rauner over this issue.
And I did find that a little bit surprising. Those of you at the State House, were you not surprised that the Dems didn't load up with powder and fire on this issue too much?
Somewhat. I guess I expected a little stronger response. If not a condemnation of what he did, at least setting some kind of marker out there saying that this may be pushing the extremes of what you can do with executive orders, and we're going to have to review this. But they seem to still be in this mode of trying to accommodate the governor, trying to cooperate, at least for now, and see where things fall.
That may well be the key, the for now. Again, this budget proposal that Rauner is set to put forth is what everyone, leaders included, it seems, are waiting for. And their tone may well change. This may not be the last that we hear from Cullerton or Madigan on fair share dues. And it just was not an immediate reaction. It is certainly noteworthy that they had such a calm initial reaction. But I think there's plenty of time that we could see for the Democratic leaders to lash out.
What percentage of union dues those who have to pay a fair share fee pay? What do you have any idea what percentage it is?
I didn't
Sorry
see
to
a
pin
percentage.
You on a number there.
I believe
Rauner said $577.
The average amount that a person pays is $577.
But we're not sure how much that would be.
Well, a percentage of their salary is? Yeah. No, I don't know.
Well, and I've heard differing things. I mean, you hear unions say that it's less because there are restrictions, these fair share dues. So how this works is, let's say you're a janitor or something and you're covered by a union and the union negotiates, you get the same raises as the union members do, but you don't have to join. The union can assess, you know, a smaller portion. It's supposed to be, or theoretically a smaller portion, because it only covers the union's grievances and negotiations for that employment unit. It doesn't cover their political activity. Rauner disputes that characterization because he says that for a government union, everything they do is political in some way, even negotiating their contract. It's not just when they contribute to candidates and things like that. And I think it would just probably vary from place to place. I have heard that in some school districts, for example, the fair share fee is not very much less than what it would cost to just join the union outright. But I don't have a specific number either.
Well, and that's where we've heard from, for example, the Conservative Illinois Policy Institute complaints. They, came out with a report that basically said unions use way too much of this, that they've been stretched too far, and that they are, in fact, using these dues for political work. Unions obviously deny that.
I suppose it depends on how you look at it. If you take the governor's approach that when a government union sits down and negotiates a contract, because it's with a public body, therefore it's political, yeah, everything they do is political. On the other hand, if you have a narrower definition of political activity to be campaign contributions, going out working for candidates, that kind of thing, and you differentiate that from the things that a typical union does in negotiating over wages, benefits, conditions of employment, then it strikes me that it's probably only fair to ask people who are going to benefit from these services to help pay for them.
And as we look at this issue, drawing back a little bit, is Illinois the next Wisconsin, Charlie Wheeler?
No, I don't think so. And there's a certain irony here. Everybody looks at Wisconsin as being sort of like, oh, man, I wish we were like Wisconsin. Well, the other day, just for the heck of it, I sat down and I calculated. Someone with Rauner's reported income, the Rauners, he and his wife filed jointly, their reported income for the last tax year, had they lived in Wisconsin, they would have paid something close to $2 million more in income taxes, because Wisconsin has a graduated income tax and the top rate is well higher than Illinois'. They would have paid all kinds of service taxes that we don't have in Illinois. So before people, look at Wisconsin as being sort of like paradise on earth, it would be good to kind of look at the facts. And I'm not a Wisconsin hater by any means.
You have a cabin there.
Yeah.
So it is your paradise on earth.
Up in the North Woods. It wouldn't be at this time of the year when it's like 30 below. But in the summer, it's wonderful. Yeah, I go up there as often as I can and for as long as I can every summer. But nonetheless, I think, to be fair, you have to look and compare these things using facts and not somebody's rhetoric.
Where I think people are drawing the distinction is just the path that Rauner is following in terms of what Walker did and the attention that it brought to the state in the fight between government and unions, or at least the fight being led by the state's CEO effectively along that path. And if Rauner is successful at all with his court battle on fair share dues, as I said, there's a potential that that could have nationwide implications, as did a case that Rauner cited on Monday when he signed the executive order that does stem from Illinois. It's whereas he tied them very closely together, it's a bit tangential, and it involves home care workers and whether they need to, you know, pay these fair share dues. And the U.S. Supreme Court said no. There's a lot of thought that the U.S. Supreme Court may chomp on the opportunity to take it a step further.
But I think it's instructive. The reason the Supreme Court said no was it said these people aren't state employees.
Right, right.
You're listening to State Week. Just ahead, the governor says he wants to form a commission to shrink the prison population. That's coming up.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and Brian Mackey, along with Gatehouse News' Doug Finke. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. The governor this week issued another executive order. It more or less created a task force. You could probably do that without an executive order, I presume. But the focus is shrinking the state's prison population, Brian Mackey.
Yeah, he went to the Sangamon County building where the Sangamon County courthouses are, and he had some judges and the sheriff standing behind him, some probation officials. And, the Illinois prisons are overcrowded, or they're, let me put it this way, they will dispute that claim. The Illinois prisons are crowded. It's currently at 150% of the capacity the buildings were designed to house. Some of those buildings date back to the 1800s. The corrections officials will dispute that, and they say, well, we've made, you know, upgrades. We put in bunk beds where maybe there used to be one bed. Double celling is now the standard, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of outside experts think that Illinois prisons are very crowded. There are individual prisons that are much more crowded than that 150%. They also cost a lot of money. $1.3 billion in the current budget year is what we're spending on corrections. And, you know, a lot of people say they're not very effective. A lot of inmates, once they're released, go on to commit more crimes. So Rauner is convening this task force to study the issue. This is going to be actually at least the third such group in the past year. There was a kind of a super committee of House and Senate last year, and then the Senate president is also convening his own special committee to look at these issues.
So that, and that doesn't even include any task force that's looked at such issues in the past.
Yeah, before this recent spate. I mean, there is something going on across the country. You've actually seen a lot of red states. It's kind of a Nixon going to China thing. Texas, Kentucky, Georgia, where they have, you know, because of fiscal conservatism, because the prisons cost so much. You know, we've had 40 years of policies in America where we're giving people longer and longer sentences for lesser and lesser crimes, particularly in the war on drugs. And it's just costing a lot of money, and it's not very effective. And so you've actually had red states who, you know, because Republicans have this reputation as being tough on crime, they've had a little more license to go in and maybe do a little more evidence-based sentencing policy, right, where they say, okay, what is the most effective way to get somebody to stop being a drug user who commits burglaries to feed their habit? Is it to lock them up, release them, lock them up, release them, lock them up, release them in an endless cycle, or do you try and divert them into treatment or something like that? So those are the issues that this commission will be looking at. I do think it's interesting that the way he wrote this executive order, he gets to handpick the people who are on the commission in consultation with the General Assembly. Typically these things, you know, the House Speaker, Senate President, and the Republican leaders get to say, okay, here's our four or five people who will be on, but Rauner wants to have control over who's going to be on this. So that's kind of an interesting wrinkle to how this is going to be organized.
Do you think it sets the path, though, for some type of true change?
There's certainly that possibility. I mean, he's gotten a lot of praise from criminal justice advocates. He hired one of them, actually, John Mackey, who had been the head, no relation, it's spelled differently than my last name, but he had been the head of the John Howard Association, which is an independent prison watchdog group. He's now director of the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, pending Senate confirmation. And he kept on Governor Quinn's director of juvenile justice. So, I mean, there are changes happening elsewhere in the country. And if, you know, Rauner follows through on this, then, yeah, there could be change. But it's always so politically difficult because Rauner himself ran ads against Governor Quinn about an early release program from early in the Quinn administration. These issues always become politicized because people will be released from prison, some percentage of them will go on to commit more crimes. Some of those crimes will be violent, and that always makes for an effective political advertisement.
And well,
recall, though, is that virtually everyone who goes to prison is either released from prison at some point or dies in prison. I mean, those are the only two options, right?
Right. They either get back into society or they cost more and more money as they become elderly and infirm. Yeah.
And it's interesting because you talked about the political, what would you say, dangers of this. Well, it was slightly more than 20 years ago, Governor Jim Edgar appointed a Blue Ribbon Task Force to look at prison situation, prison crowding, because our prisons were 50% over capacity back in the mid-90s. Well, the report came out and it recommended things like providing more substance abuse treatment, giving good time off for inmates who got education in prison, more electronic detention, expansion of boot camps, alternative sentences so that you don't have this expensive cost of incarceration, and it was pretty well received. And the guy who was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, a guy named Tom Homer, state representative at the time from Canton, sponsored legislation to carry through on these recommendations from this report. It was called the Voulkas Report. The chair of the task force was Anton Voulkas, a former U.S. attorney in the Northern District in Chicago. And things seemed to be moving along. And then Bob Michael retired from Congress. Tom Homer, who is a Democrat, ran in the Democratic primary in 1994, and he lost by roughly 1,700 votes, and a big issue was that Tom Homer was soft on crime because he had sponsored these bills to do all the things that the Voulkas report suggested. And after that, the legislature shied away, and it was very hard to get anything done. And you would talk to individual lawmakers who would say, yeah, our sentencing scheme is crazy, but I'm not going to do anything about it because I don't want to have those brochures, those mailers come out accusing me of being soft on crime.
I think there's an additional dimension that makes this politically interesting beyond what Charlie and Brian have noted in terms of, you know, do you want to be soft on crime or viewed as such? It's also that the Senate president himself had talked in his inauguration speech about doing something along the lines of this, and it was supposed to be, you know, bipartisan. And so is this an opportunity for Cullerton and the new governor to get along and make headway, or is this going to be a question of who gets the credit, who started this, and will there be some major personality and power conflicts that impede something getting done?
Well, I could see one area of dispute already. I mean, there have been initial suggestions from some of Rauner's budget cutters that what we ought to do is privatize prisons, but that's before somebody checked and realized that Illinois law does not allow prisons to be privatized. But it doesn't say anything, I don't think, about the whole parole operation and probation and so on. And so that could be something that would be farmed out to some for-profit company.
Now, the governor traveled around central Illinois visiting schools. It seemed like he had at least 8 stops over a couple of days, possibly more. And what he was doing was saying he supports education, as all governors say they do. And he says in that budget next week that he will release, there'll be more money for education. Also this week, the Civic Federation out of Chicago gave some budget recommendations, some ideas of what it thinks needs to be done to address the state's budget situation. Doug Finke, you had a chance to read that over.
Yes, I did. And some of it are were things that Rauner has proposed himself. They endorse the idea of taxing some services, which are not currently subject to the state sales tax. But they also recommended a much more gradual phase out of the income tax increase. And in fact, for the short term, reinstating part of that increase. They also recommended taxing retirement income over a certain amount. I believe it was over $50,000. That has been a third rail of politics in Illinois for a long time because retirement income is not subject to the state income tax. So it was a very comprehensive report, and it was no doubt would help solve many of the state's fiscal problems. How realistic it would be to enact all parts of that, I have my doubts, but at least it's some food for thought going forward after we hear the governor's budget speech.
Amanda Venicky, what struck you most out of that report?
You know, I think that it's just this combination that cuts alone won't be able to do it. And Rauner himself has said that a tax increase alone is not the answer. And everyone, again, just looking to see what exactly he's going to do. A lot of these are very controversial. The head of the Civic Federation, Lawrence Massal, admitted as much. But he said that that's what has gotten Illinois into this situation in the first place, that for so long, legislators, you know, kicked the can down their own and didn't have any sort of, it was just a 1 year, pass a budget in May and, you know, there's all this consternation and political will used up when they need to be looking further. So one of the kind of outside recommendations beyond just tax increases was that there needs to be a 5-year plan. And additionally, there were a couple of nods in recognition of how all of these additional taxes could be harmful for low-income residents. And the report recommended an increase in the earned income tax credit. And when it talked about beginning to tax retirement income and how much Illinois is losing compared to neighboring states by not doing that, making an exemption for Social Security and for income below $50,000.
We've got just a minute or so remaining in the program. I'll try to get in a note from the field or two. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I do want to mention, pegged to our prison discussion earlier, famously Governor Pat Quinn never visited prison during his time in office by all accounts. And he even, you know, was asked about it numerous times by reporters and advocates and just said, you know, I trust my staff to run it. Within his first month on the job, Governor Rauner did go this past week to Logan Prison in Lincoln, Illinois. It's about a half hour north of Springfield, and took a look there at what he could see. Very vague about, he was on a radio interview the next morning and was pretty vague about what he saw, but said it was not good. So we'll be eager to hear him elaborate on that.
And Doug Finke will get a note from the field from you.
Talks continue between the governor's office and legislative leaders about giving him some extraordinary budget powers to try to plug some of the holes in the current budget. I was told by one person familiar with the talks that they think they are closing in on some kind of an agreement that will not give Rauner obviously everything that he wants, but it will give him some pretty extensive authority to switch money around.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Doug Finke of Gatehouse News. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.